Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Join millions of students learning on Skillshare and get 2 months free when you sign up at skillshare.com/AC. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the book Herding Tigers, which is about how to lead creative teams effectively. On today's show, we're going to talk about something from Herding Tigers, but it's not about leadership. It's really more about you. It's about what animates your best work, what drives your best work. I think sometimes we think we are motivated, we're driven by the tasks we do. The reality is that we bring our motivation to the tasks that we do. And I'm actually working on a much bigger project right now that's related to all of this in the realm of motivation. I can't really talk about it right now, but I will be soon. But I want to talk today about something that I wrote about in Herding Tigers, about the different types of motivation that we experience and why maybe we might be thrilled with our work, or maybe we might be dissatisfied with our work or with our job or with the tasks we're doing, because the tasks we're doing aren't naturally aligned with the core things that animate us, that drive us motivationally. So that's what we're going to talk about on today's episode. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So listen, as creative pros, we all get into ruts over time. We default back to standard ways of doing things, the way we've always done it. We revert back to old techniques, old tactics. It's hard to get out of ruts, but getting out of a rut and staying creative is something we have to discipline ourselves to do, even if we have a busy schedule. You know, maybe you want to get back into an old passion or learn something new. For example, I've recently become reconnected with songwriting, which is an old passion of mine. Maybe you want to build, fuel, and expand your creative fire. Well, you can do so with Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community for the creator in all of us. They have thousands of classes in illustration, graphic design, photography, animation, entrepreneurship, web development, productivity, anything you want to learn, marketing, anything you want to learn, you name it, they've got it. Classes are on demand, so you can learn at your own pace. There's no more waiting until 8 p.m. next Tuesday to take the class. You don't have to do that. It's on demand at your time, wherever you are. You can get inspired, you can join a class, and you can create something you'll love. I've mentioned recently that I've reconnected with my love of music. Once upon a time, 20 years ago, I was a full-time musician and really loved writing songs and playing music. And it's something that kind of fell by the wayside for a number of years as I, you know, built a career and wrote books and traveled and consulted and did all of the things that I have done for so many years now. And I've only recently become reconnected with my love of music. And Skillshare has all kinds of classes in music, music production, things that help me reconnect with that core passion and develop my skills and become reacquainted with some old tools and to learn new tools as well and new kinds of skills. It's important that we connect with those core creative passions, even if they have nothing to do with our on-demand work, the work that we do every single day. Unnecessary creating or back burner creating is important to keeping your creative fire alive. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare and get 2 months absolutely free when you sign up at skillshare.com/AC. That's 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. It's a heck of a deal. Get started today by heading to skillshare.com/AC to sign up. That's skillshare.com/AC. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Okay, let's talk about what drives you. Now, there are two kinds of motivation, generally speaking, that exist in the world of motivational theory. The first kind is extrinsic motivation. And these are things that are external forces like pay, prestige, titles, fear, frankly, like a lot of managers motivate with fear, right? So they will make you fear losing your job if you don't perform. That's a kind of external motivator. It can be complicated because you can internalize external motivators. You know, for example, your fear of losing your job could be something related to an internal drive that you have to perform. And it could, you know, so it can get complicated. But generally speaking, these are, you know, there are external or extrinsic motivators, and there are internal or intrinsic motivators. And these are things that are related to how we're naturally wired, the kinds of things that animate us and drive us that we, you know, that we don't rely on other people for or even on our circumstances for. Instead, they're just internal drivers that naturally push us to continue doing things even when other people might give up. And so I want to share with you a passage from Herding Tigers. It's in a section called Leading Brilliance, and it's about motivation, and it's about how to help the people on your team understand what drives them. But I want to talk about this in the context of you. Now, if you're a manager, this is going to help you, of course. But I want to talk about it in the context of you and how you need to think about these categories to determine, okay, is there something here for me in terms of how I'm structuring my life, in terms of the kinds of career I'm going after? Is there something that is misaligned for me, or does this help me understand why I come alive sometimes and other times I struggle? Okay, so here begins the passage from Herding Tigers. Creative people often have broad shoulders and diverse capabilities. There are a lot of things that people on your team could do, and I would amend that to say there are a lot of things you could do as a creative pro. The question is, should they? If you put someone in a position every day where the work feels like drudgery, he or she might succeed for a while, but the motivation is going to wane over time, and he will struggle with burnout and dissatisfaction. As we saw in an earlier chapter, people grow bored if they do not feel appropriately challenged. So being in a role that pushes people to grow can make the difference between passable work and exceptional work. Okay, I'm going to pause right there and say, listen, if you find yourself in a situation where you're not challenged or where you feel like the work you're doing is just repetitive, it's just over and over and over, I'm just continuing to do the same things over and over, you're going to struggle as a creative pro because, as I wrote about in Herding Tigers, you need both stability, which is clarity of process, clarity of expectations, all of those things. But you also need challenge. You need to be pushed. You want to try new things. You want to take risks. You want to solve different kinds of problems. We need both of these as creative pros in order to thrive. So if you don't have both of those, if it's just repetitive work, then your passion is going to wane over time for your work. Okay, so as a manager, as a coach, or as you're leading yourself, it's your job to help people or to help yourself discover the work that you're made for and what lights your fire. Now, this doesn't mean that people are going to love every task they do. No one does. But it does mean that you want to work your way to a place where you're generally doing work that gives you a sense of engagement and gratification. So in writing Herding Tigers, I spoke with a guy named David Weiser. He's a hiring consultant, and he told me, just because they have the experience and skills to do the work doesn't mean they're right for a particular job. They will get bored very quickly if they're not in the right place, and that will create problems for everyone. So Weiser categorizes most jobs into one of three categories: jobs for builders, jobs for fixers, and jobs for optimizers. So that's where I want to camp out for the remainder of our time today: builders, fixers, optimizers. And I want you to consider, which of these do you think best describes you? Are you more of one category than another? And if so, how does that affect the kinds of work that you deeply resonate with, that really gratifies you? And how might it be affecting your ability to engage with your work if you're misaligned from the core thing that you're wired for? So let me talk a little bit more about these categories. Builders are people who live for process. They live for the process of creating something new. They want a clean slate. They want a difficult problem to solve, and they want no instruction manual. They thrive on ideas and the chaos of early stage projects, and they're at their best when they're figuring out things as they go. However, when you ask a builder to work on a more mature project or to manage something already in progress, they will drive you crazy. They're perpetually seeking a new way to blow things up and start over again. And you've probably experienced this, right, with builders before, where you've encountered someone who just continues to blow things up. They just continue to change things because they can't, for whatever reason, they can't seem to just say, okay, it's good enough. They have to keep building, keep doing something new. They're perpetually seeking ways to blow things up and start over. They will try to split off the project and create something new. Sometimes they'll say, okay, I'm going to go over here and do my own thing because they need to build something. They're not satisfied with tweaking something that's already there. They always have to be innovating, always have to be creating something new. So this is builders, okay? Fixers, this is category two. Fixers are people who get charged up by analysis and diagnosis. They can quickly scan a situation, they can identify the broken dynamics, and they can quickly find a solution. They're always in search of a broken system, and they are most motivated when they feel needed to fix a specific problem. A fixer can't listen to a conversation without stepping in to offer advice, and they can't tolerate open loops. However, if you assign a fixer to a brand new project with no parameters, they will often become paralyzed. They're great at problem solving, but they don't always do well with few parameters. Okay, so these are fixers. They do really well with existing problems that need to be fixed. They're not always great at wide open spaces or brand new projects where they have to completely come up with something. All right, okay, so the third category is optimizers. Optimizers are people who get excited about taking something good and making it great. So they're really good at tweaking things. They are tweakers by nature. They're always looking for efficiencies and they hate to see waste. They make the meetings more efficient, they make the workflow more productive, and the team more focused and lean. They often lack tolerance for the inefficiency of creative work and the uncertainty of entrepreneurship. They hate inefficiency. They're always trying to squeeze as much as they can out of every single system, process, and person. They do best in roles where they have clearly defined objectives and clear ways to quantify their performance. So, what does this mean for us builders, fixers, optimizers? Well, if you're launching a brand new project with few rails and a lot of exploratory work to do, you probably don't want an optimizer leading the charge, right? Or if you are an optimizer, you probably don't want to accept a job where you're going to have wide open spaces because it's going to paralyze you. You're going to be frustrated. If you're trying to get to the bottom of why your clients seem unsatisfied with their interactions with your team, you probably don't want a builder on the job because the builder is going to say, okay, fine, let's just blow everything up and rethink our entire client service process. Okay, well, probably not. That's probably not the right solution. Or if you're in a situation where you find yourself trying to solve acute problems, but you just continue to create more messes than you fix, maybe it's because you're a builder trying to do a fixer's role, right? Or understanding, you know, for example, if you are someone who is being put in a system where you have to just continuously optimize, you're just continuously maintaining and optimizing and squeezing efficiencies out of things, you're managing resources, then a fixer is probably going to break things just to find something to fix. Okay, so you don't want to be in those situations. So if you're a builder, you're going to be good with wide open spaces. You're going to be good with at the beginning of projects where it's brand new, it's all white space, and you have to figure out what you're going to do. You're going to be really good in those circumstances, but later in the project, you're probably going to grow a little bit disengaged because now it's just about executing the stuff that's already been determined and things are a little more settled. And it's more about managing process at that point. So if you find yourself later in the stages of a project getting disengaged, it could be because you're wired as a builder, because your thing is coming up with the ideas and innovating and thinking of new things and going into places people won't go and taking risks. But you get bored later because then it's all about maintenance and execution. So maybe that's because you're a builder, and maybe you need to think about what does that mean in terms of the kinds of jobs I take, the kinds of roles that I accept, the kinds of projects that I ask to work on. If you're a builder, if you're a fixer, that means you get charged up by solving problems. If you go for a long time without solving problems, or you don't have some specific problem in front of you, you might find yourself looking for problems where they don't exist, breaking things just to have something to do. That's not a good place. So if you're a fixer, you will get involved in your friends' relationships. You'll step in and try to offer them advice, like with unsolicited advice. You can't overhear a conversation with a peer without saying, hey, let me take that on. Let me fix that for you. Let me try to help you with that. And so it's easy for fixers to become burned out or overly burdened, overly stressed because they're taking on too much because they find problems everywhere to solve. It's what they love to do. So you have to be mindful of what are the problems I'm solving and what are the critical few, I call it the big three, the critical few problems I need to focus on today or this week in order to be effective. And I wrote more about the big three in the Accidental Creative back in 2011. So you can also check that out if you want. But if you're a fixer, that means you want a job where you're going into situations that exist and you're solving problems. So for example, fixing the client interaction issue, that's something for a fixer. Right? Because it's a problem. It's an acute problem. It's there. It's mostly okay, but there are a couple of broken parts that need to be fixed. That's what you're going to be great at. So if you're a person looking for a problem to solve, you're probably a fixer Are you getting enough problems in your work to solve? And then finally, we have the optimizers. The optimizers are going to be paralyzed at the beginning of projects because there's nothing to squeeze efficiency out of. It's all about, you know, they're going to want to try to get to the finish line as quickly as possible, but that's not always the best approach. Sometimes you have to wait. You have to, as Adam Stelzner said, you have to stay in the dark room long enough to get to the right idea. Well, that's not very efficient, right? So if you're an optimizer, you're going to be somebody who's looking to tweak systems, to perfect, to squeeze efficiencies. And so you don't want to probably be in an entrepreneurial role, at least not at the very early stages of an organization, because you know early stage organizations tend to be very inefficient because you're trying a lot of things and you're failing, you're wasting resources sometimes in the effort to try to learn and to move forward. So that's probably not going to be a great role for you. You're going to be frustrated. You probably want to attach yourself to work that's more mature, where a lot of the value that's captured is the result of efficiencies or optimization, not the result of effectiveness at the beginning, where you're just, you know, maybe spending a lot to try to learn in those early stages. That's probably not where you want to be. So if you're an optimizer by nature, you're going to be stressed out if you're involved in those early stage projects, or if you're always having to come up with brand new ideas that nobody's ever thought of before. And if that stresses you out, it could be because you're an optimizer and you need a different kind of role. I am a builder by nature. That's my nature. So I love starting things. I don't like maintaining things. This was a definite, unquestionable pattern in my own leadership, where I would start things and start things and start things, but I didn't always think through the systems necessary to sustain it, because I'm always going on to the next thing once something is started. And so you have to, if you're building something, you have to think, okay, who's going to be the fixer in my life and who's going to be the optimizer in my life? Right? If you're managing a team, you need to make sure you have a good mix of builders, fixers, and optimizers, because you're going to need all three of them as you move forward with whatever initiative that you're doing. If you don't, if you just have all builders on your team, you're going to start a lot of things and maybe create a little bit of value, and then they're all going to burn out because you're not going to have somebody there to help manage the process or manage the systems. Okay, builders, fixers, optimizers. That's the gist. I wrote more about it in Herding Tigers, so check it out if you want to know more. But which are you? How does that affect you? What does that mean about the kind of job you should take? You know, don't think it's about the tasks. It's probably about how you're wired. So how can you bring more of the thing that you are to what you do every day? I think that's the most important question we can ask when it comes to sustainable motivation. All right, would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your comments about this. Interact at accidentalcreative.com is my email address. You can reach me there or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.